This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hello, I'm Sheila Rogers. Welcome to the best of Sounds Like Canada. You're listening to our podcast of the day's highlights of Sounds Like Canada, and you can catch our full show on CBC Radio 1 at 10 o'clock or a couple of times a day on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. It can be lonely at the top. At least that's what Alan Wachowicz found out as a young lawyer back when he was called to the bench. He's now Alberta's top judge. He was named Chief Justice of the Court of Queen's Bench in 2001. The Court of Queen's Bench celebrates its 100th anniversary this year, and the Honourable Alan Wachowicz joins me from our Edmonton studio this morning. Your Honour, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I was, before we went on the air, talking about how I should address you. You suggested Your Honor would work because that's the official one. Mr. Justice, Your Worship, Big Al. But how did it feel the first time someone called you judge?
It was the strangest feeling in the world. I felt like I'd been divorced from society. I had a couple of days before I became a judge, one of the lawyers in Edmonton called me all kinds of names because we weren't getting along and trying to settle a deal. And 3 days later, he sent me a letter of congratulations saying, "You're obedient servant." So the contrast was just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. What did it mean for you socially and personally?
Well, socially, it changed my life. There were a lot of things that I used to do that I found that I couldn't do. And personally, it was a blow financially, and so it affected me in two fronts. Socially, it was, it's like any young lawyer in those days, had a young family, you like to go to the bars. I told I couldn't go to the racetrack. I was curtailed in my activities or who I could be seen with. And financially, it was a tremendous blow to me because I had a young family, as I said, and making very good money as a lawyer because I was very active and had a very good practice, a practice that took me all over the world in aviation insurance. And I went down from about maybe four times what I was making as a lawyer.
Really?
To a judge's salary.
I don't know that everybody understands that it would have been a cut in pay.
Well, it was about $150,000 a year back in 1974 to $34,900.
Boy.
And I didn't realize I owed so much taxes, and I had triggered taxes because there was an accrual system that had come into play at that time. So I triggered over $100,000 worth of taxes. So that was there was a big change in my life.
You are also the first Polish Canadian to make it to the bench, I understand.
I'm not sure if I'm the first Polish Canadian. I'm the first
Polish Ukrainian.
Polish, yes, of in Alberta at least, and maybe in Western Canada. There may have been one. I think there was one in Winnipeg and one in Hamilton before me, but I certainly was the first of Polish ancestry in Edmonton and Alberta.
Were you ever known as Alan Walker?
Yes. People called me Walker. A lot of people called me Walker. I used to tell the story that, when I was a young lawyer, my name was Wachowicz. I couldn't make a dollar practicing law. I changed it to Walker, and look at me today. Well, it's the other way around, really. a lot of people still call me Walker. They see me on the street, and I used to find that it was easier to get a reservation in a restaurant if I use the name Dr. Walker rather than Al Wachowicz. So one of my little ploys.
Doesn't Mr. Justice help?
I don't do that. When I make a reservation, I usually let them find out someplace along the line. Usually I just use my last name.
What about the actual judging part? What kind of challenge is that?
Well, when I started as a judge, I didn't find the actual judging that difficult. Because I had been in court and I was always speaking to judges and just on the other side of the dais. What I found difficult was living the role of a judge, because I was comparatively young to the other judges. Most of the judges were at least 10 or 15 years older than me. And I found myself very lonely at that stage, and it wasn't until another judge was appointed, who was a classmate of mine, he was appointed about 4 years later, that finally I found a buddy on the bench. I found myself closing my door quite often, and the phone never ringing. And therefore, that part of the life was pretty lonely. But judging itself, I could make up my mind. I felt I was decisive, and I felt I was right. But the Court of Appeal, of course, set me straight a number of times. But that part of it, I enjoyed. I enjoyed sitting there. It is a difficult job. And it's not one you take lightly, because a person's liberty is at stake, mm-hmm. person's property is at stake. It's a job of misery when you think of it. The only happy thing we do is a bar admission, maybe an adoption. Other than that, you're dealing with problems. It's very stressful.
Then what has kept you in it for so long?
Well, I always felt that I was taught that if you have a vocation, you dedicate yourself to your vocation, whatever it may be. I loved law school. I loved being a lawyer, because you solve problems being a lawyer. What kept me there, it's an extension of the law. As I gradually gained some experience, I found out that I had some wonderful colleagues on the bench, people I could talk to, people I could relate to, people who would tell me what the score was in the hockey game last night, besides straightening me out on maybe a decision I made a week before where they felt I was wrong. There was a candid conversation, and we got along very, very well. And it improved, I can tell you, when the women got to the bench. When I was a lawyer, there were no women on the bench. And the women were very candid, forthright, and enjoyable by way of a conversation and having their point of view, which is a little bit different than the men's.
How would you characterize the difference?
Well, I think that they were softer in tone in the way that they would deal with problems. I think they showed a little bit more compassion and empathy than the men did. There were subtle differences. I don't know how to label them, but I could see that much at least.
A minute or two ago, you called it a vocation, and I'm sure you know this, but vocation comes from vocare, the Latin to call. Did you feel it was a calling?
No, I felt it was a pushing. I was going to go to university, because it came from a family of eight, and all of them went to university or equal to. I was the second youngest, and I was going to take phys ed. I thought I was a little bit of an athlete. I realized later in life that, boy, I was average. And my brother was the person who said, no, you're not going to take phys ed. You're going to go to law school. My brother became a lawyer. He's about 6 years older than me, and he later on, we were partners, and he became the chief judge of the provincial court. Hmm. Someone told us once that we were the only two chief judges in the history of Canada as brothers, and he's now retired.
What did you talk about at dinner?
You're talking about at our house when I'm growing up? Or
no, actually with your brother.
With my brother? Usually the law. The dinner was a time to discuss other things. We were very close, got along very well. I practiced with him for 16 years, he had very much of an influence on me, as were my sisters, all six of them. There were six girls, two boys. Wonderful family.
What about your parents?
Well, I owe so much to them. They had the foresight to know that education was the way out. They were children really of the Depression. My father had one day in grade one, and went to school, was an English teacher, couldn't speak any Polish. At the end of the day, he felt that there was some kind of magic, because he was using this instrument in his hand and was writing on the blackboard and was leaving a mark. And my father stayed a little longer and took that piece of chalk, and he went up the blackboard and he learned his first words in English. When the teacher said, "Piece of chalk," which a piece of chalk in Polish means puppy dog. And he was self-taught after that. He became a merchant. And my mother was just an absolute mother. My mother became the oldest in a big family overnight, because I think three of her siblings died within about 10 days during the flu epidemic in 1919. Mm. Raised a family that still gets along very, very well. And but the education was, they just set their minds to it and made sure that their children got educated.
You grew up in Opal.
A little town called Opal up by Redwater. It's still on the map. I looked to see if it was still there yesterday on a map that I happen to have in front of me. And it's still there.
Is your house still there?
Yes, it was a wonderful home. It was built out of fieldstone. It was built in the early 1930s. My father, had sponsored a Polish stonemason to come to Canada. And he built this house for $500 because my father had the lumber yard and could supply the cement and everything else. And it had electric lights. And in those days, electric lights was something to behold. We had a Delco power plant in the basement, which provided the lights. And I remember back in the 1940s, we had Christmas lights to put around the windows. Well, people came from all around to take a look at the Christmas lights we had. It's a home that's still standing, and a person from southern Alberta bought it. I went to see it here a couple of years ago, and I thought it was big when I was a little boy. I just realized how small it was. And we would have 20, 25 people for Christmas dinner in the front room, and I can't see where we put them.
It so often happens, doesn't it? That house is big in memory, but so small when you see it.
Oh, yeah. The well was just, I thought, right, just... I felt a long ways behind the back door, and I got there. It's just five steps away. And it was the imagination of a child transmitted into what you remember as when you grow up. It's a beautiful, beautiful way of looking at life. From huge, huge concepts to how small things are.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to a high school at St. Joseph's High School, and it was an all-boys school, under 200. The girls came the year I left. I missed that. And St. Joe's was a very, very good school because the kids came from all over the city. So therefore, you had friends from all parts of Edmonton. Edmonton at that time was about 150,000, more or less, maybe a little bit bigger. So I had friends all over the city. And then I got to know my friends from all over the city. The year that we graduated, which was 1953, I think it was a graduating class of about 50-some, and about 80% of them went to university. Mm. We were really inspired by the priests and the teachers who were there. They were completely devoted to their vocation, and that was trying to be a complete teacher.
Are you still friends with the boys you met there?
Yes, that's a wonderful thing about early friendships. We still keep in touch. The Dunnigan twins, who are good friends of mine, and Jerry Karpinka, just names just come out of the blue all of a sudden. And every time we see one of them, we'll always ask about another, and we're brought up to date. We had a 50th reunion here, in 2003, and it was amazing how many came back, notwithstanding how small the school was. What I've tried to do is... to collect some pictures for the school of people who had gone to that school, who have gained some degree of infamy or became famous.
Who else besides you?
Well, there was Robert Goulet.
Hey.
And Ed Oleniak, who's now Ed Carroll, the voice of Jiminy Cricket in Hollywood. Bill Smith, who's the former mayor. Normie Ullman, who's a hockey player, Billy Day, who was a hockey player, Johnny McCormick, who's John Goose McCormick, played for Toronto Maple Leafs, the Montreal Canadiens. So it was a school of a number of boys who had left their mark, most of them positive. I can't really think of anybody who really got in deep trouble in that school.
At one point, I understand that the principal of your high school thought you might be headed for the priesthood.
Father McDonald was a great big Scot. He was about 6'3", and that was big in those days. Carried a pointer with him at all time. And he approached me at the end of the year in grade 12. By that time, I had been serving Mass for Archbishop McDonald. They were not related. I served Mass for him 3 days a week for about 3 or 4 years. I lived about 3 blocks away, and he went through altar boys like Mickey Rooney went through wives. You know, if you made any kind of mistake, you're out. You lost your job. And for some reason, he took
I'm sure that wasn't how the wives of Mickey Rooney left mind you. But
I thought it was a good metaphor.
And it's pretty good as far as it goes.
So I... the Archbishop talked to me for a very short time, and I think he sort of told Father McDonald to talk to me. And when you got called out of the office, I mean, there was something wrong. And I remember being called out of the office, Wakwich, you got down to my office. So everybody said, oh boy, what the hell did Wakwich do? So, I actually had a nice conversation about going to the seminary. I used to walk by the seminary, the seminary since moved, and some of the guys would wave at me. And I looked him in the eye and said, Father, I just can't. I like girls too much. I just like girls too much. Which was true. So they gave up on me.
How has your faith played into your role as judge?
Well, I'm a practicing Catholic. Faith is very much part of my life. I've always felt that there are two concepts to man in the generic sense, and that there's the physical as well as the spiritual. And I think that spiritual concept is one that has to be cultivated, and you have to look at it and stimulate every so often. I believe in the power of prayer. I'm not one who's a proselytizer going out there to convert people. I am. But yet, it's a very much part of my life, and people should be aware of that fact. I don't wear it on my sleeve like my cufflinks, but I sure wear it within my heart. I wish I understood it better. I understood the concepts of faith, hope, and charity a lot better than I do. And I try to learn and try my best, but to conduct myself as one would expect me to conduct myself. But in this life, we're all sinners, you know. I've often said that's why I belong to the Catholic Church. It's a church of sinners. And that's not really the reason. I think it was inspired by my parents. You know, historically, the Polish people are very Catholic, and that's, I think, maintained itself.
Sure. I'm speaking with the Honorable Alan Wakowicz. He is the Chief Justice of the Alberta Court of Queen's Bench, and he's in our Edmonton studio this morning. Your Honor, you must be one of the only judges in the country who has actually spent time in jail. How did that happen?
How did you find out?
Because I have very good people behind me and in my head.
I will admit to it because it was part of a public record when I was sworn in as a judge. Chief Justice McGillivray of the day said, today's an historic day in the judiciary in the province of Alberta. And I said to myself, you know, pompously saying, well, he's going to tell the people I'm the very first Polish judge in Alberta. And he said, this is the first time we're swearing in a judge who's been in jail four times. And, you know, kids get in trouble. You know, young people get in trouble. They do foolish things. If you learn from them, you profit by it. And I've never been sentenced to jail. I just found myself in jail. And I don't think my mother ever found out. I hope she never did. But I was foolish things.
Like what?
Well, a whole bunch of us at Alberta Beach, which is a resort just outside of Edmonton. It was now sundown. The flag was still flying. And I showed my athletic agility by climbing up the flag. When I looked down, all my friends were scattering. I had the flag in my hand, and Louis, the town cop, was down there to greet me, and he threw me into a very rudimentary jail, which was like a dog cage in the middle of a field. And trying to save my friend in Saskatoon, and we're on a legal law students exchange and he barged out the hotel with a beer in his hand, and I tried to save him, and we both ended up in jail. So those are the kind of incidents. Once the RCMP didn't like the way the speed I accelerated to while bringing back a Ford Mustang in 1954.
No, wait
sorry,
a minute.
The Thunderbird.
That's the Thunderbird's fault.
The Thunderbird, yes.
It drives you.
Well, I I was bringing it back from Calgary to Edmonton because the GM was having a car show in Edmonton, and they wanted to compete with this car show, and I was working for the dealership called Healy Motors. They flew into Calgary, and I literally flew back with this Thunderbird. I was beating the radar. They had just started radar in those days to check speeding. By the time I got to Edmonton, I had a reception committee from the RCMP greeting me, and they threw me in jail.
Do you think that spending some time in jail, albeit not a lot, but do you think it's made you a better judge?
Well, it's given me a wider experience. I think people, not the experience you necessarily need that you should have, but it's allowed me to be myself, and I've learned from those experiences. And you also learn that when you're dealing with young people, a lot of people make mistakes. You know, they're not criminals. They make mistakes. And you have to treat, but they become criminal acts. And therefore, you have to have a lot of empathy for individuals like that. A lot of people can really be saved. And I remember touring a prison one time, and a young prisoner said, if you come to this place, you spend 3 months and you haven't learned your lessons, it's just a way too late for you. Because a little taste of what a jail is like is enough to really make you turn around. So I've gained by that. And, I wished I wouldn't have, but I did. I profited from it.
Your Honor, we have very little time left, and I just want to say happy anniversary to the Queen's Bench. And I understand you've been traveling around the province trying to visit every courthouse in this 100th anniversary year. Thank you very much for a view of the man behind the robes. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's a great honor to be on your program, and I wish you well. And we're celebrating the 100th anniversary, and this is part of it, too. And I thank you for inviting me.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Bye, Big Al.
Bye.
The Honorable Alan Walkowicz is Chief Justice of the Alberta Court of Queen's Bench. That's the best of Sounds Like Canada. Highlights from our show on CBC Radio 1, heard weekday mornings at 10 o'clock. I'm Sheila Rogers. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.